Welcome to Hollywood and Horsepower, the show about the story behind the story. Today is going to be a little bit different. We are actually going to talk about the show. I don't have a guest, so you are stuck with me today. And I figured it was a good way to kick off 2025. We had a little bit of time through the holidays there where we had to run some reruns, and I apologize for that. But we're back. We're ready for 2025. We're excited about what the year brings. And we're going to have a lot of really exciting guests to bring you. But I thought this would be a good time to talk a little bit about the show. I've had a lot of people ask me how it came to be, what it was that started this. And, you know, that's an interesting question. And I realized we never really talked about it. We just kind of jumped in and took off. So my name is Mark Otto. I'm the host of the show. And I grew up in southern Michigan, had kind of a unique childhood, and grew up listening to the great voice of the Great Lakes, J.P. McCarthy, on the massive AM station, WJR. Anybody who knows radio or anybody who lived in the Midwest or even beyond that knew about J.P. J.P. was just a legend. He was, you know, more than just a morning host. He was like beyond a local celebrity. JP would have everybody from iconic Hollywood celebrities to the Pope on his show. He would do live broadcasts from Lions games, Tigers games, the U.S. Open. Any major event, JP was usually there. And there was a few things throughout the year that he was known for, one of which was St. Patrick's Day. He was a very proud Irish American, and he would throw a St. Patrick's Day party every year live, put it on his show. And the saying was, everybody could be Irish for a day. And even though I was an Italian American, I really thought this was neat. I mean, it was really a cool thing. And so that's kind of where I first got my taste for a talk show. Obviously, growing up listening to Johnny Carson, you know, and different things. So as I'm coming up, I get into high school, and I had started out outside of Detroit. I was born in Detroit, put up for adoption. My mother met me and decided we should just be friends. So I was very fortunate that I got adopted by a very nice family, very good family. And long story short, we ended up moving from the suburbs, or the edge of Detroit, I should say, where it wasn't the suburbs, out to more rural setting because of my grandparents. They were getting up in the years and needed a place. So I kind of had both a rural and urban growth, you know, coming up. Growing up, I got into FFA, Future Farmers of America, got into public speaking, and I felt very comfortable with it right from day one. My dad did a lot of speaking. I saw him do it. That's probably one of the reasons why it wasn't real intimidating. And one thing led to another that as my career advanced, you know, I going through high school and then went to college for a bit, didn't finish. Went into a program with the Navy called NAVCAD, because at that time, all I thought I wanted to do was fly for the Navy. And got through the program, but then could not fly due to having kidney stones at the time. So now you're at the fork in the road, and it's time to find something to do. After bouncing around a little bit, I end up with a job in marketing and sales, and really never thought I would be there. But what it did for me was it kind of honed my speaking ability. Not that I'm great, but it made me more comfortable. So, you know, in talking to people and speaking at events, I actually found that I enjoyed it. I enjoyed engaging with people. And that was probably still at this point, never thinking that I would ever do something like this. Cut fast forward through family, kids, divorce, everything else. I, you know, come out of that with two amazing kids. I have a son and a daughter, Keith and Grace. They are my life. And in my travels and a lot of the travels with them, we've met a lot of really interesting people. not by design, almost more by, you know, accident with what I do. So one thing leads to another. And obviously I've said, you know, I've worked in marketing and sales. And when you put together marketing campaigns, a lot of times radio stations, TV stations would ask you to come on in the morning of the event, whether it's a football game, basketball game, you know, NASCAR race, Kentucky Derby, whatever the event may be, and talk a little bit about the company that sponsored it. So that was really kind of my first time on the air, was doing that. And this is going, cutting into about 2010, 11, 12. One thing leads to another, and several people would say to me, you know, you've got a really good voice for radio. Have you ever thought about doing it? My standard reply was always, you know, well, my mother always told me I had a face for radio, and never thought about it too much. But one thing led to another, and I was involved with a couple of different media groups. And then, you know, this opportunity came up, and somebody said, you know, would you be interested in doing a show? And I said, I would do it as long as it doesn't have to be another talking head in sports. I don't consider myself an expert on any of the sports that I work in, whether it's automotive racing, horse racing, you know, or anything else. I'm close to it. I'm been very fortunate that I get to attend a lot of things. I'm coming to you today from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm here to do a show, and, you know, Barrett Jackson is here. The NFL playoff game just finished the other night. So I'm very fortunate that I've been close to a lot of these things, but I don't consider myself an expert. So I didn't want to be anybody that's, you know, breaking down the event, whether it's horse racing, automotive, whatever. I just wanted to talk more about the people involved. The thing that's always interested me, and the thing that always caught my attention, was how people got to where they are, not career-wise as much as what brought them into it. When I would meet famous people, and I've been very fortunate to meet a lot of them, my question was generally not anything to do with what they were known for. It was usually something they weren't known for. So, you know, without, you know, too much name dropping, I was fortunate. Compliments of Bob Baffert, a very well-known horse trainer, World Hall of Fame horse trainer, that him and his wife, Jill, have always been very kind to me. And they allowed myself and Michael Bowen to attend the Kentucky Derby and then, you know, through the Triple Crown with American Pharoah. And we were at Belmont, which is the third leg of the Triple Crown. I am standing there, and I notice the gentleman standing next to me. Everybody keeps coming up and saying, you know, oh, Joe, it's so nice, you know, what you've done. And, you know, we're so, you know, such an honor to meet you. And I kept thinking, I have no idea who this guy is. And which, when you hear the name, you're probably going to wonder how I function. But Michael, recognizing that I didn't recognize this gentleman, leans over and says, that's Joe Torre. And I look at Michael in complete confusion, and he says, baseball manager, and also he owned Game On Dude. Well, Game On Dude, for those of you that don't know, was a very famous, in my opinion, racehorse that during, well before I ever even met Michael Blowen or got involved in horse racing, I worked for another company that I did a lot in California. At that time, Game On Dude was coming up through the ranks, and he was a very successful racehorse under Bob Baffert and Jimmy Barnes, being owned by Joe Torre and some other owners, and he was very successful. I don't know if it was his name or his demeanor. He was a very calm horse. Now, Bob Baffert may disagree with that, but I mean, watching him from a distance, he seemed like a very docile, calm horse, seemed like a very smart horse. You know, you could just tell that he didn't seem rattled. He didn't seem as wound up as the other horses. So he kind of stood out when you watch a race. And because of that, he caught my attention, that and his name and the fact that he always won. So cut to this, he had kind of become my favorite horse. at that time, I had been doing some volunteer work with Old Friends Farm. You've heard me talk about them on this show before. Old Friends is probably the largest thoroughbred retirement farm in the world. And if it's not, I think it's one of the best run. And if you're ever near Lexington, Kentucky, you owe it to yourself to go see it. It's oldfriendsequine.org, one of the few things we plug on this show. But I'm there with Michael. He tells me, you know, this is Joe. And, you know, they had just recently gotten Game On Dude. So I immediately turned to what turned out to be Joe Torre. And I said, oh, my goodness, you own Game On Dude. Of course, he's looking at me like, do we have security in here? And after a minute, when he realized that, you know, I wasn't, you know, any harm, we started talking. And I told him, I said, we have Game On Dude at Old Friends. And he was immediately excited. Now, as most of you know, and I later found out, Joe Torre is an immensely successful baseball player, an immensely successful baseball manager, and later went on to I believe he was the, you know, really high up in Major League Baseball. And I'm sure there's several of you screaming at your radio right now, so I apologize that I don't know his career like I should. But we started talking, and he said, I love that horse. I would really like to come see him. And I said, you know, I think that's great. You know, and I gave him my information. He gave me his, and he left. Michael said, you know, don't get your hopes up. You know, sometimes, you know, people say they're going to come, they get busy, it doesn't work out. But, and I said, no, I think he's serious. I think he will. Long story short, about 2 weeks later, my phone rings. And it was Joe. And he says, the offer's still good. I said, absolutely. So he came to Old Friends in Lexington, Kentucky. Turns out his family, his wife's family, I should say, was from Cincinnati. And he was coming to Cincinnati for a all-star game with Major League Baseball. This is back about, I believe, 2015. It had to be 2015, actually, because of Farrell. So long story short, he comes to the farm, spent the better part of the day. I had gone to the Louisville Slugger Museum, got a bat made, which anyone could do. You don't have to. It isn't a huge accomplishment. I went to the gift shop. But it was like I wanted to give him something for the guy that has everything that was significant to his horse. So I got a Louisville Slugger, and I put on their Game On Dude, starts, finishes, and total earnings. And he loved it. And he had brought several signed baseballs to have Old Friends auction off to raise money for the horses, spent the day there with his friends, and, you know, we had a great time. The point of the story is what interested me the most about Joe and many other people like Joe that I've met was how he got involved. And I couldn't help but ask him, as we're walking around, I said, you know, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know who you were. He said I could kind of tell. And I said, I Googled you to learn about your career. And he kind of smiled, and I said, I have a question, though. I said, how did you get involved with horse racing? And he kind of chuckled, and he said, it's a funny story. You know, when I was with Louisville playing baseball in the minor leagues, you didn't make a lot of money. But, you know, for entertainment, and, you know, for an afternoon, you could go to Churchill Downs, get a couple of hot dogs, get something to drink, and watch the races. And, you know, much like the entire history of horse racing, you had the opportunity to turn $2 into 10. So it was a fun afternoon either way. You either had a great afternoon for a couple of bucks, or you had a great afternoon and you walked away with 10 bucks. So he said, that was really where it started, and that's where the love grew. And then he got into it after he moved up in the game and started to make a better living. And, you know, he was fortunate that some of the horses that he bought did very well. But those were the kind of stories that really interested me and made me want to do this show. I've always been curious about the story behind the story, and it's interesting to me that there are so many of those. Toby Keith was another one. Toby as many people know him, was a very successful country music singer. He was a super nice guy, absolutely down to earth. But he also owns a ranch that still goes today. Unfortunately, we lost Toby, but Dreamwalker Ranch. And Toby loved going to Keeneland, going to Churchill, and when he could, and watching his horses run and other people's horses run. And it was always interesting to me to, I was fortunate that I met him through some people and, you know, again, asked the question, how? And he said, you know, I got into a lot of different things. He goes, this is probably because of my daughter. But, you know, he was trying to diversify because he wasn't sure that the music would continue. So it's always interesting to me to hear people's stories and see what brought them to that, whether it's automotive racing. We're fortunate enough on this show to have Carrie Earnhardt join us, Ryan Newman join us and talk about their careers. To get a chance, go back to the archives and listen to those. They're really interesting. I've been fortunate to meet Ray Everham over the years, who was Jeff Gordon's crew chief. And I've always been intrigued by the story behind the story, like how these people came to get into the sport that they were in. And it's just interesting to me. And then this medium, this type of media is very interesting to me because with, you know, radio and now podcasts and streaming, it really gives people a chance to connect and feel like they're part of the conversation. And I like that. And I think it's a really fun way to put things together. And this is kind of the last group of speakers, which is kind of why I've always been intrigued by this. The other thing I've always been intrigued by, for anybody who knows me well, is comedy. So Saturday Night Live to me, we're in the 50th year of Saturday Night Live this year, 2025, which is absolutely amazing to me. And Lauren Michaels has done just a phenomenal job, which doesn't even need to be said, but much like everybody else, I'm going to. But I feel like stand-up comedy and podcasting are very similar in the sense that it's the last place of real speakers. You know, years ago, you know, if you wanted to hear a show or if you wanted to hear somebody speak, you had to go somewhere and, you know, they traveled around and, you know, they would do the same show over and over. And that's what the industry was. And today, with this format, we're discovering more and more people every day. That's a double-edged sword, right? I mean, it's great because you do, you know, discover people, and it's also almost mind-boggling because there are so many. I mean, I don't even know what the count is on shows today, but it's you know, hundreds of thousands. But that was really what intrigued me and made me want to do this. And from there, you know, I've been very fortunate that I've had some great guests. I've had some people on the show that I found very interesting and hopefully you guys found interesting. And that was kind of what made me want to do this. Where we go from here, I think, you know, we continue the same. I mean, I've always been a big believer that you never forget what brought you to this point. And what brought us to this point was basically sitting around talking about, you know, things that we found interesting. And that's what's going to continue. I enjoy this. I like talking to you guys. Hopefully you like listening to this. And I hope that we continue to do this for a long time. We are looking at several new things. And we definitely want to help give back and support. One of the ways we're doing that is with old friends, mentioned them. So oldfriendsequine.org. They are a great organization. And it's actually a great place for somebody to go and visit. If you've never had the chance to meet Michael Blowen, you owe it to yourself to go to the farm and meet him. He's absolutely amazing. I've I could sit and listen to him for hours. Talk about somebody with a lot of stories. He worked in Hollywood as the entertainment writer for the Boston Globe in what I consider to be the golden era of Hollywood. You know, Jimmy Stewart and Sheldon Leonard and, you know, just amazing people that he was able to interview and spend time with and become friends with. Julie Epstein wrote Casablanca, and, you know, there's just countless stories, but you owe it to yourself to do, to see that. Another one that we are, that's very near and dear to us is No Fallen Heroes. Matt Wiz Buckley, another naval aviator, part of the same bloodline that I feel like I came from. He went further, obviously, and he was actually a Top Gun instructor. So there's Top Gun pilots, and then there's Top Gun instructors, and then there's Top Gun adversaries, and that's what he was. So for those of you that were Top Gun movie fans, he was kind of like Jester. He was the guy that, you know, would put you to the edge and beyond to teach you how to dogfight. After his career in the Navy, he was a very successful broker. He was one of the reserve pilots on 9/11. He was on the tarmac in the jet waiting to launch when, you know, the Twin Towers were hit. So he has had a very amazing career. And one of the things he did is he started a foundation called No Fallen Heroes. No Fallen Heroes is developed to hopefully prevent veteran suicide. And it's more than hopefully, because he is preventing veteran suicide. There's a bunch of different numbers, as Wiz says, and I agree with him. Depends on who you talk to. But at the end of the day, the number we go with is one. If we don't want to see one veteran end because of a suicide. It's very sad. We understand it's a battle many fight. And that was the reason he started No Fallen Heroes. So we are involved in that, getting more involved. That's another organization that I would encourage you to look up, see what you can do. If you can't do a lot, do what you can. And you're going to see events coming this year from Hollywood and Horsepower to support No Fallen Heroes. We really believe in helping and giving back. And that's something that, you know, we are very passionate about. The other thing that we are getting involved in is a group out of Miami. And it is a, you know, a volleyball tournament, which we'll be bringing you more about. It's called KICK, and it is a great organization. If you get a chance, you can look it up. It's called ROCTournaments.com. They do tournaments all over Florida. There's actually one this weekend in Orlando, but check out the website and you can learn about that. It is a great organization that helps in a lot of different ways. And they are also doing what they can to help No Fallen Heroes. So, you know, we're really trying to not only have some fun here, tell some stories, hopefully let you guys hear some stories that we have been fortunate enough to hear sitting around dinner tables and sitting at racetracks. It's just been something I'm very fortunate and very thankful that I've been able to be part of. This is something I never thought growing up in Southern Michigan that I would be fortunate to do. I can't honestly say it was a dream because I don't know that I knew this existed, but I always enjoyed talking to people and I still do. So maybe it's just one of those things where I like hearing my own voice. I don't know what it is, but I've always enjoyed listening to other people as well. I like hearing people's stories. I'm always curious where people come from, how they got to where they are, what made them get into what they're doing. So that was a big piece of it. And that the other part of it is, you know, we just, you know, we enjoy what we enjoy, right? So, you know, I'm passionate about travel. I'm passionate about animals. I have a little, you know, little dog of my own, Parker, who thinks he's a person. You know, I work with, you know, retired racehorses and do what I can to help them. My attitude has always been, whether it's for a food bank or a foundation, No Fallen Heroes, or something else, if you can't do a lot, do what you can. You know, it's amazing to me that the people that I look up to, that I look as very successful in many ways, the one thing they all have in common is that they, you know, give back unconditionally. You know, if you look at, you know, Matt Wisbuckley and his wife, Susie, they absolutely put their life into this, No Fallen Heroes. If you look at Michael and Diane Blowen, the same thing with Old Friends. I mean, they put their life into it to help these horses. And, you know, you look at Carlos from ROC Tournaments, and it's the same thing. You know, these people do everything they can to help other people. And that was something I was raised with as well. My parents who adopted me were very good people. They were very involved with several food banks in southern Michigan. And it was something they were very passionate about. They did a lot to help people. And they did more than what the organization did. I saw my dad many times go and purchase large quantities of turkeys or large quantities of something to give away at holidays that was above and beyond what, you know, a food bank was going to give people. And the thing he always said was, you know, nobody plans to find themselves in a bad situation. So don't be too quick to judge and do what you can to help them. So I've tried to live by that. Can't say that I've been perfect at it. And obviously, as you get older, you learn a little bit and it, you know, you see things a little bit differently. But, you know, I hope that this show is both entertaining and helpful. And we definitely want to be something that's interesting and something that you look forward to turning into. So, you know, with that, I thought I would also talk a little bit about, you know, things that are coming up. So I touched on it a little bit. This is the 50th year of Saturday Night Live. And, you know, Saturday night to me is an institution. I can't speak for everybody, but for myself and most of the people I know, you know, Saturday night has shaped our culture in so many different ways. And I know that there's probably dozens of shows that also touch on it. Probably the top one would be David Spade and Dana Carvey's show, which if you've never seen that fly on the wall, you owe it to yourself to listen to it and see it. They are phenomenal. And they're also very interesting because they get a lot of their co-hosts and, as Dana puts, their bandmates on there to talk about the show. But if you go back and look at how it started, I don't think anyone, probably other than Lauren, really thought that it was going to go the distance. And it's possible that Lauren didn't even think it would go this far. But it is phenomenal in the sense that it has gone on now for 50 years. And all but 5 of those years, the executive producer was Lorne Michaels, which I don't know of another show that has done that. So I find that really interesting. The other thing I find interesting is how influential the show is on, you know, our culture, not only in creating comedy icons. So if you look back, the people that have come out of Saturday Night, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, you know, it's just amazing. David Spade, Dana Carvey, John Belushi, you know, the list goes on, and I feel like I'm, you know, not doing a service because I know I'm leaving people out, you know, Gilda Radner. The thing that's amazing is think of everything that they have created, you know, Judd Apatow, you know, the things that they've created that have gone on to shape our culture is amazing. I heard somebody say one time, you know, Lauren wrote the Constitution of Comedy, and then there's been countless people after that that have written amendments. And I really feel like that is true. And I also feel like that's true in entertainment in general, even with this little show, that, you know, every person kind of puts their twist on it and it just keeps moving forward. So I really love the show. I love what it's done. And I find so many things interesting about it, not the least of which is even what people find interesting. I like hearing people tell me what they like. And it is interesting that generally when you talk to someone, if there is something that they really like about that show or any other show, it is because that was when they were in high school or college, every time. So I think what that drives from is the fact that, you know, when we're in high school, you know, that especially going back to people that were in high school in, you know, the 80s, maybe even before that, 70s into the early 90s, you know, pre-internet, I would say, that was, you know, you didn't pull up and watch this week's episode on Monday. If you missed, you know, the episode on Saturday night, you were waiting 6 months to see a rerun. If you lived in England, you didn't see it probably for years, unless you were traveling. So it was really interesting to me how much has changed. And it was interesting that at that time, how much it shaped people. You know, you talk to people and they're very passionate about what they think the best years were of Saturday night and Saturday Night Live. And it definitely stands the test of time that it was when they were in high school or college. And I think that it's interesting because almost every era at the time that it was being broadcast live was criticized pretty severely. And then years later became iconic. So when you look back, you know, we've all heard the phrase Saturday Night Dead. And there was people that were like, you know, the best years are behind it. The original cast was the only one. But then if you look back now, you know, you can see iconic members all the way up to present day. And I think that that really is a testament to the show. So it's really exciting for anybody in any type of speaking, because I almost feel like that same constitution that formed comedy also formed, you know, shows like this. You know, people like to listen to people talk. And if it wasn't for stand-up comics and people in show business that started that, you know, I don't know if things like this would exist. And for people who are young comics coming up today, they have the advantage of doing something like this that will expose them. And I think that's really cool. So there's a lot of things that I really like, and you'll hear us talk about it. It may or may not interest you. I hope it does. I've always had the feeling that, you know, I don't try to figure out what other people like. I talk about what I like and what I enjoy, and I assume that if it intrigues me, it probably intrigues someone else as well. The other thing is obviously travel. You know, I'm very passionate about travel. I travel for work. And unlike a lot of people that dread it, I actually enjoy it. Can't say that I enjoy everything I see. And, you know, I will address a few points that I wish we could talk about is, you know, air travel. I really don't understand what has happened. And I'm not trying to sound like a dinosaur or some old curmudgeon. But, you know, when I was growing up, you dressed to travel. And I'm not saying you have to wear a suit with a tie, but I do think you could take a shower and put on some pants. it's kind of amazing to me that you see people showing up to the plane and they look like they slept in their car at the airport and then staggered into the terminal. They're carrying a pillow, they're dragging a Hello Kitty suitcase, and they're wearing their pajamas. Again, not trying to sound like a dinosaur, but, you know, could we put a pair of pants on? I know this started with some Hollywood actors and actresses that, you know, would show up wearing sweats, and it was suddenly, you know, casual chic. Unfortunately, that doesn't transcend to the average person. I just think, you know, we need to get back to people dressing to go. The other thing is, could we just bring something simple on the plane? I don't understand why people have to bring a 3-foot-long hoagie garlic sub and or build your own fajitas or a bowl of soup that's big enough to wash your hair in on an airplane. Get a hamburger, get a sandwich, get something simple. Try a protein bar. The guy next to you doesn't want to smell your hummus and onion sandwich. It's a small, confined space. Think about the guy next to you. You know, the other thing is, let's try to figure out a bag that actually fits on the plane. You see people dragging what looks like, you know, grandma's trunk down the jetway. There's no way this thing's going to fit in the overhead. There's a half a chance it won't fit through the door. And I don't understand what is so complicated about this, but I do wish people would take a minute, think about the guy sitting next to him or lady, and try a little harder. It amazes me what you see on a plane and at the airport. You see things in the airport you won't see in your neighborhood, which kind of seems backwards to me, because I would think if you're going out in public, you know, I've heard it said many times, and I agree with this, you know, when you see the world sees you. You know, if you're going to a nice restaurant, put on a pair of pants. It isn't that difficult. You know, put a shoe on. You know, it's kind of gotten a little out of hand. And I think, you know, we could try a little bit harder. So, you know, travel is great. I enjoy it. You get to see a lot of new things. I encourage people to do it. I've encouraged my kids to do it. Mark Twain said, you know, travel is absolutely fatal to bigotry, narrow-mindedness, and prejudice. And I truly believe that. You can't travel and not realize, you know, this world's a lot smaller than it seems, and we're all really just people, which, you know, is something that, you know, we need to try and, you know, understand a little bit better than we do. We support a lot of things here, and, you know, one thing we are very passionate about is not supporting anti-Semitism. You know, some of the nicest people I know are Jewish. I don't understand anti-Semitism. We were fortunate enough to have Rabbi Raps on the show with us. If you ever get a chance, please take a moment and look him up. He's very interesting. He's funny and informative. And the one thing you realize is just very kind. And that has been my experience overall. And in general, with any religion. So, you know, a little kindness goes a long way. You know, think about the guy next to you, whether it's in an airplane, a hotel, airport, or in your office. And, you know, try a little bit of kindness. Goes a long ways. We have had a lot of people on the show with a lot of diverse backgrounds that I really find interesting. And that will continue. We're going to continue to try and get people from all different walks of life. And the reason I like to do that is because I find it interesting. And you know, from the feedback I've gotten, I think you guys do too. So if you have any suggestions, we are on Instagram. You can, you know, send us a message. We're trying to reach out to people that we would like to get on the show. But if you have some suggestions of people that you'd like to hear on the show, feel free to shoot us a message and we'll definitely do our best to get them on. We really enjoy talking to everybody. We appreciate all of you guys listening. We are now on Westwood One, New York. We're on Apple and Google podcasts, downloadable. We're on Spotify, Audible, and it's kind of amazing to me that it has grown this much. So I appreciate you guys listening every week. I really have enjoyed being able to talk to you guys. In a lot of ways, it's a dream come true, and it does take me back to listening to people like JP McCarthy, who I always looked up to. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's people like him and Lorne Michaels and a lot of stand-up comics, you know, that really paved the way for people like me to be able to talk to you guys and, you know, talk about stuff that's important to us. You know, the other thing that I would be remiss if I didn't point out on this show is some of the people that have supported us. You know, we've had, you know, I mentioned, you know, ROC tournaments, Carlos, you know, they're a great organization. Take a moment, look at them, you know, really, really close friend, almost family is MB Gray. And she is probably the most phenomenal healthcare consultant in the world, in my opinion. If you get a chance, look her up, mbgrayhealthcare.com. If you own a company or have an organization that is in need of some help, there isn't anyone who's better at helping you navigate healthcare benefits and, you know, your insurance needs. And in most cases, she's going to save your company money. If you have some time and you're traveling, definitely visit oldfriendsequine.org in Georgetown, Kentucky. And that kind of brings us up to some of the favorite places that I like to attend. You know, Malone Steakhouse in Lexington, Kentucky is one of my favorite places. My kids grew up going there. Keith and Grace always liked that place. That's one of Grace's favorite restaurants. Tony's Steak and Seafood in Lexington is an amazing restaurant. And I know we're kind of plugging a lot of different things, but anyone who knows me knows that I really enjoy trying new places, trying new restaurants. And we've had a couple of shows where that was what we talked a lot about. Big A is a regular guest on the show, Anthony Stabile. Big A is another, he's a character from Howard Beach, New York, who's right out of Central Casting. He's like family to me. He's Italian. He is the voice of Finger Lakes for horse racing. He has been on multiple different shows. He's working on a couple of new shows right now. And anything that he does, I encourage you to tune in and listen to, because he's very interesting. He's very informative. And he is a true New Yorker. And it's fun to hear the things that he likes. One of the things that he likes is King Umberto's in Howard Beach, New York, which I love too. King Umberto's is one of the best Italian places that I have been. And I haven't been to all of them, but I've been to a lot of them. And I absolutely love that place. Another place that's a must attend is Steve Moriano's in Fort Lauderdale and Philly and Pittsburgh. Steve is just a phenomenal person. His restaurants are just so much fun and the food's amazing. You owe it to yourself to try it if you're anywhere near them. Another place that I really encourage you to try is Anthony's Runway 84 in Fort Lauderdale. It's a really interesting place. Unfortunately, we lost the host this year, Vincenzo. He was an amazing guy. He was a fixture on the place, but it's still a terrific place. My favorite restaurant worldwide is still the Palm. So the Palm in Miami is kind of like home when I'm near there. They're a great organization. They just do a terrific, you know, meal. It's one of those places that you just feel comfortable at. So there's so many great places, you know, Rosebud on Rush in Chicago. And, you know, I just encourage people to get out, try something new, go to something that's off the beaten path, try an independent restaurant, because more times than not, you're going to find something that you want to go back to. Frank and Dino's in Lexington, Kentucky is an amazing place. They have great food. The owner, Carlos, is usually in the kitchen or walking the restaurant. He is a very talented guy, and he's, you know, just a fixture. And really enjoy that place. It's one of the places that's a must go to if you're in Lexington. Those are probably the three tops are Tony's Steak and Seafood, Malone's Steakhouse, and Frank and Dino's. And then, you know, you wouldn't be going to Lexington if you didn't go to Old Friends and go see the horses. The thing that's unique about Old Friends, there's a lot of places around the country that have retired racehorses, but none that have as many high-profile racehorses, Kentucky Derby winners, Breeders' Cup winners, and none that you can stand and feed a carrot to and, you know, get a tour and hear about, you know, the races that they've won. So it's really worth the trip. If you're in the Miami area, be sure to check out Gulfstream Park. They race live, you know, Thursday through Saturday or Sunday most weeks. And it's a great place. They have a terrific restaurant upstairs, you know, the 10 Palms room. It's absolutely worth the trip. And the manager is one of the nicest people around, Charles. He'll do anything for you. It's a great view. You can sit there, watch the races, have a great lunch, and you never know who you're running into. And that kind of brings me up to, you know, we've touched on it several times through this hour, is horse racing in general. You know, horse racing is one of the fabric of our country in America, I feel. Even though it didn't start here, Americans might find it hard to believe, but, you know, this started actually in the Middle East and then went to England where they fine-tuned it, and then it came to the United States. But horse racing is one of the sports that still allows you to get up and up close to it. So you don't have to have access or know someone. You don't have to have a lot of money to be able to go to a race and be able to get right up close to where the horses are running right by you. And that's unique. You know, almost any other sport, if you want to get close, it comes at a price. With horse racing, it's a very accessible sport. It's one of those sports that you can be standing on the edge of the track and look over, and here's one of the owners, or here's a Hall of Fame trainer, or a Hall of Fame jockey, or a retired jockey. And they're always very kind. They're always very accommodating, and they'll generally talk to you, sign autographs, take a picture. It's one of the most accessible sports I've been around. And I think it's unique in the sense that it's not just about the race. You know, it's also about the dining and about the hospitality, or, you know, all different levels. Everything from having a hot dog and a beer down on the apron to fine dining upstairs. Whatever your interests are, it's there. And that's one of the things that's kind of nice and fun about it, is that it's a sport that accommodates any interest of any kind. And when you look back, you know, you go back and look at Hollywood, you know, horse racing was kind of a fabric of Hollywood for a long time. You really couldn't count the number of movies that have had some reference to horse racing in them. Almost every sitcom had references to horse racing for years. You know, I Love Lucy, and, you know, the Jack Benny Show, and, you know, several other shows, you know, that was a regular thing every week, was that they would talk about, you know, the horse racing and talk about Santa Anita, or they talk about Belmont. And it was something that really was part of the fabric, and kind of sorry to see that go, but I would encourage anybody who has never been, if you're near, you know, there's tracks throughout America, California, Texas, you know, Arkansas, Florida, New York, Kentucky, obviously, you know, take some time and go. You know, we had, speaking of Texas racing, we had Brian Pettigrew on here, who's the vice president of Penn Entertainment, the track in Sam Houston in Houston. And if you get a chance, you know, that's another great entertainment target. You know, that's not just horse racing. They have a lot of other events that go on. It's the same thing at Gulfstream. You know, Belmont Park is being redone. I don't think it's going to be open this year, but when it does open, you know, that's definitely going to be a destination. And, you know, there's places like Saratoga and Del Mar that are, you know, absolute, you know, pieces of history. You know, when you go to those places, you can't help but be kind of mesmerized by the amount of history. I mean, when you walk Del Mar just north of San Diego, it's just phenomenal. When you see the pictures of Bing Crosby on the wall and, you know, different actors and actresses that would go there. It was just, it's got so much history, and Santa Anita is the same way. Saratoga is the same way. It's just something that is a lot more than just horse racing. So it's great food, great people, and great history. And I would really encourage anybody, if you're looking for something to try new, if you're looking for some entertainment that's not only affordable but interesting for your family, I think it's a great, great afternoon. And it's something that won't break the bank, and it's a memorable event. So it's worth doing. I grew up, just because of my job, I would be at these events, and I would take my kids with me when they were with me. And it's something that we still talk about today. Some of our best memories are those trips to Kentucky or to Florida or New York. And, you know, that's the thing that, you know, you find as you travel. You know, people don't remember the real expensive things. Well, you're probably going to remember a Bentley or Ferrari, but in general, you remember events, people, and places more than you remember things. So I would encourage you to get out there, try new things, try new restaurants, see this country, see other countries. The world is a lot smaller, and it's getting smaller. I was noticing something the other day. You know, when you look at prices, in many ways, you can travel to Europe and cheaper than you can travel to some places within the U.S. So, you know, think outside the box. Don't just go to the same places you've always gone. Take a look around. Try something new. Go to a different restaurant. Go to a different, you know, area, and, you know, you're going to be amazed at the things that you see. And I really would encourage you to get out, explore, you know, go to a, you know, automotive race. And, you know, to that point, just like horse racing, you know, there's multiple levels of automotive racing. You know, Ray Everham has done a terrific job of finding and bringing back historical race cars. And then, you know, getting them back out on the track in different series. You know, I know that they are resurrecting the IROC series, and there's all different types of racing, from SCCA to the vintage race cars to, you know, some of the, you know, shows like Amelia Island. And, you know, it's another place that is a great way to spend an afternoon. You'll see history, you'll see vehicles that, you know, may have belonged to famous people, may not have, but in many cases, they're one of a handful of that model that still exists. So it's, to me, it's always fun to see, and I think most people would agree. But I just wanted to take a moment and thank the people that have made this show possible. I mentioned some of them already. MB Gray, she is an absolute legend in healthcare. Take some time. If your company or organization needs some help, look her up, mbgrayhealthcare.com. She is the best of the best. She won't cost you a dime, because, quite frankly, she won't take your company if she can't save you money. No Fallen Heroes, we encourage you to take a look at them and get involved. If you can't do a lot, do what you can. Everything that goes to No Fallen Heroes goes to helping veterans. You know, this, everybody that supports it that I'm aware of doesn't take a dime. This show does not make one penny for what we do for No Fallen Heroes or for old friends. We do this because we believe in it, and I really want and hope that we can help somebody out there. If we can save one veteran, it's worth it. And, you know, these people gave their time, in many cases, gave, you know, their lives to help us. The least we can do is help them. So take some time, look at No Fallen Heroes. It's an interesting organization, and I really believe in what Wiz is doing. You know, really appreciate what ROC Tournaments is doing for us. Take a look at their website. There's going to be more coming on that, and we would encourage you, if you're close, go see one of their tournaments. It's really interesting. They're a great group of people. And again, you know, most of what you will see this show support are things that are, quite frankly, fun. It's something, you know, that is fun to go see or fun to watch, and we'd encourage you to go out and check it out. So if you're in New York, go to King Umberto's. If you're in Miami, go to the Palm. And we really appreciate you joining us. This is Hollywood and Horsepower. This is Mark Otto, and we will see you guys again next week.